Hey y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to discuss the defense versus the Falcons in that preseason week two game. Doing that with me is Kevin Ostreicher. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Another preseason game in the books. I think at this point, everybody is saying bring on the regular season. But of course, the Ravens still have a bunch of roster decisions to make, and this final preseason game coming up is going to help with a lot of that.
Yeah, and it's some of its roster decisions, and also there's some decisions made about the practice squad. But the Ravens currently on the interior offensive line, we're going to have some serious discussions about what the Ravens are actually doing come on the offense show, which is tomorrow night. Kevin, of course, from Locked On Ravens, you probably know his content from them. He's probably the other guy in the Baltimore area who produces as many total programs per year as I do. So I had to provide this recently, but about 340 last year. I'm sure you're about the same, right?
Yeah, with the bonus episodes, lives. Yeah, it comes out. I'm probably a little less than you are. You're a grinder, man. But the daily coverage, you and I both know it well.
Yeah, labor of love to be sure. So we had a day football game. Weird situation, obviously. The Orioles playing a night game at home. Unfortunately, the back end of that doubleheader did not go. That was the game we really needed to have. But the Orioles got it turned around today, as we talked to you on Sunday night. What's your feeling about day football in the summer? I personally, I love it. For every other time of year, I don't really even like night games of any sort for the analysis burden.
Yeah. But
during the summer,
it felt so weird to me because, you know, during the regular season, you know, once it gets to fall, winter, it feels so natural to have those like 1 p.m. starts. And this one was only an hour earlier and it felt like it started at like 9 a.m. Like it felt like it was so early. And maybe that did have to do with the fact that the Orioles were playing later that night. But I wish they had started a little bit later. And I think I'm so used to, Ken, these preseason games being at like 6 or 7 at night. Like I think that with the Ravens, they haven't really had a ton of those like noon. I don't even know if there was a noon start last year. I don't know if they implemented that or whatever it was, but I'd rather them have it at like the 6-7 time for the preseason. That just feels like a more natural start time, but it is kind of funny how, you know, we get up for the 1 p.m. starts and that whole thing is a different animal. And then it starts an hour earlier for the preseason in summer. And it feels like it's just like at the crack of dawn.
Yeah, it is. It does feel earlier in the day. And part of it is, you know, obviously the diurnal schedule is different. But the right. the other thing is that from an analysis perspective, there's a lot of work that has to go on after. My wife makes huge contributions to this, and so it really helps to have a day game. And the weather wasn't too bad. You know, yesterday it was a little muggy, but it wasn't. It was bearable. We've had night games that have been worse in terms of both either the precip or the heat being more unbearable. It's actually a pretty nice day of football, and all things considered, from my point of view.
Yeah, and again, I think the fact that makes it even better is we would usually have to. The Orioles season was kind of a slog to get to football season back. You know, they had a bunch of terrible years, obviously. But now with the Orioles being good again, with the Ravens, obviously, a bunch of excitement, the Orioles season has taken us up quite nicely to the start of football season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's these last 50 games have been kind of rough for the Orioles, but that's
that
okay.
Is true.
They've been hanging in there. Let's get back to the Ravens here, and we're talking about defense today. So the first question I would really have is, do the Ravens have a problem stopping the run now? The Eagles, they didn't allow a lot of long runs. They allowed a long of 9. In this game, they allowed a 17-yard run was the longest in this one. So they still haven't really allowed, you know, a real breakaway for, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards long was 17. After that, the next longest might have been only 10, or there might have been another 15 by McClellan. But anyway, in any case, they ran for 4.9 yards per play, 31 for 151 in this game. It was much more evident from the final statistics that the Ravens were having difficulty stopping the run.
Yeah, it was a problem. And I think part of it is you just kind of watched the Falcons run this ball, and it felt like every time they were getting to at least the second level, the defensive linemen, and it's a joint effort. But I think the fact that, you know, felt like there was a 8-yard run here, and then there was the 10-yard run, and then there was 17, and they were just getting gashed on the ground. And both teams don't necessarily have their starting star caliber players in there. The Falcons weren't running Bijan Robinson, but the Ravens didn't have guys like Michael Pierce, who I think does make a massive impact in the run game. But we saw guys on the field like a Travis Jones. Brent Urban played a lot of snaps in this game. So we're going to see what ends up happening. But I still think at the end of the day, I think next preseason game against the Packers is going to really show. Is this a real trend we have to worry about with some of these younger players, or are these two games just kind of an anomaly?
We'll get to it a little bit later, but most of the running did occur in the second half. In the first half, they were actually quite reasonably effective against the run when they had Trenton Simpson in there. They had Travis Jones on the field for 4 snaps. That was something. They had Broderick Washington and Urban in the first half, who were obviously guys they're depending on. And then the second half, they turned to guys like Sanat and Tupo and Ravenel and Walther to man the defensive line, which is clearly a step down. Of course, should be a step down also for the Falcons' offensive line. But one of the things about the Falcons' run game that particularly interested me in this game because of how it fed the pass game, and I don't know if this is the way they run their offense this year. I mean, you know, we're not watching NFC South games every single week, you know, living here in Baltimore. If they happen to play the NFC South, we might pick up on it. But Atlanta seems to run an incredibly high percentage of play action off of zone schemes. So they've always got their blockers moving one direction, the other, left or right along the line of scrimmage. Zone schemes, for those who don't know, you generally are moving left or right, and it's the running back's responsibility to find a cutback lane relative to the blockers who are attempting to not have people cross their face. In simplest terms, that's how I can explain it. But what we saw in this game was they ran 8 boot plays running the opposite off play action off this. I've never seen that in a single football game. I've seen the Ravens run a boot play 3 times with Joe Flacco. You know, you see, designed and undesigned rollouts by Flacco that can happen. But I'm really talking about a boot that occurs off play action 8 times in one game. It was just ridiculous.
This is peak preseason football, where, you know, you're trying to experiment with stuff, see if things work, see if things don't. None of these teams are opening up their real playbooks.
Yeah.
Where, you know, from the Ravens side of things, Zach Gore is not bringing all his blitz packages to the table in week 2 against the Falcons of a preseason game. It's not advantageous. So especially for the Falcons doing that, pretty odd when you put it that way, of just like a team doing it that much and that often during one single game. But it does kind of scream to me of like, well, teams are going to do that type of stuff in preseason games, experiment with things, and they're going to try to do the best with what they can to win. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter result-wise, win or lose. You just want to see what you have. And maybe we see the Falcons do a couple things like that. With Kirk, if he can stay healthy this season, based off of what they saw in this game.
Yeah, so they didn't have their either of their 2 top quarterbacks in this game. So we end up getting Taylor Heinicke, who's an older player, obviously been in the league about 10 years now. If you told me he'd been in the league for 15 years, I would have believed you. That's how old that name says. But there's a Warnicky I might be confusing him with anyway. There's a couple of ickies in there that have been there. Getting back to the boot for a second, though. The first 6 boot plays in the first half, they surrendered completions of 21, 7, 32, 11, 9, and only denied ample time and space once. Now, the reason the ample time space denial is basically based on one player. It's the backside edge defender has to realize this is a boot play. I'm on the quarterback and rush the quarterback. That will deny ATS and usually force that into some sort of a check down play or incomplete or whatever that hopefully will reduce the value of the boot. Well, they only got that done once in the first half. And I almost think it was like a dare that the Falcons took it as it. Well, we're going to keep running this until you prove you can stop it. And then the second half, fortunately, the very first two plays, they got pressure on the boot, both incomplete, and the Falcons stopped it at that point. Some of it was game situation also at that point that they were behind and they had to, you know, not – they weren't fooling anybody with boot plays at that point.
Yeah.
But very interesting.
And it's a teaching experience for a lot of these younger guys too, just to be able to go up against that and to have the failure. And then we saw, you know, adjustments happen, second half happens, and you're right on top of it. So I think credit to the players and the coaching staff for adjusting to something that you don't really see all that often that consecutively in NFL games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really weird to see. I mean, I think I can understand how the Falcons would really benefit from this, because play action with Bijan Robinson and having some good receivers and having a Kirk Cousins at quarterback who's going to be a major play action guy as a pocket passer. I mean, the less mobile you are, the more effective the boot is. I mean, I could see a lot of reasons why it would be effective. It was just so weird seeing it eight times in one game like that. Anyway,
yeah.
Enough on the Falcons boot. Let's get back to the Ravens defense. What else we get to talk about? They had some real issues getting pressure in this game period. So it wasn't just the boot, but I want to read you off the statistics as I calculated them. So they gave up ample time and space 18 times on only 33 dropbacks. That's over 50%. We could figure out real quickly what that is, but it's over 50% actually, which is terrible because the normal is in about the low 30s. And the Falcons averaged 9.7 yards on those plays, which is a little bit above average. I would say, you know, about nine. Last year, the Ravens were only gave up about 6.9 yards on ATS throws. But here's where it got a lot better. When the ball was out quickly, they only got 12 yards on five plays, 2.4 yards per play. That's significantly below average. And when the Ravens got pressure, which was only 10 times, nine incompletes and a six-yard gain. No sacks, but they still only had 0.6 yards per play, which is absolutely outstanding. So a mixed set of results, way too much ample time and space in this game. Did it feel like to you that the pass rush was doing some good things?
I thought we saw flashes from certain players, and I'm sure we're going to, you know, get into that as the show goes on. But from a general perspective of what we saw, I thought it was a little disappointing. And I think part of it too is the edge depth that they had last year. They just don't have, you know, like with Clowney being gone and them not playing away and, you know, Ajabo having, he had his game and then he came out. I mean, you're relying on guys like Joe Evans, who I thought he has potential, but it's a bunch of players that, again, against the Falcons threes, fours, I would have probably expected a little bit more, because I thought Evans was great in week one. I thought he had a bunch of really nice plays, a couple of really nice pressures, but didn't really pop to me as much this week, even though, you know, it's difficult to gauge from a general overall perspective, but I think from what I was expecting based off what we saw in week one, week two was a big step down, in my opinion.
Yeah, the 18 ATSs is bad. They did better things with their pressure. So I'd agree. I think it's probably a step down overall to see that. And if they had been facing a quarterback who really had taken advantage of it, it could have been a lot worse, obviously, which they can't allow this during the regular season. I'm also probably not as concerned about it for some of the reasons you named, but the main one being that their interior pass rushers, they only got four total snaps from Travis Jones and zero from Pierce or Matabike. And those three are the guys who really drive their pass rush at this point. They need those three to be generating interior pressure so that the edge guys have time to get home, so that coverage sacks have time to develop because the quarterback has to move, et cetera. So I'm really looking forward to that in week one and seeing how good those three guys still are with a little bit less edge talent on this team. I thought also, you know, we saw Adisa Isaac in this game for a fair amount. I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked what he brought to the table, but you're exactly right where that's just what the preseason is. And the trends that we see for a lot of these second third, fourth string guys, you're not going to see as much of it, at least you would hope, when your stars are in or your top guys are in. So, I mean, Broderick Washington got some run here. Brent Urban obviously had some as well, but those aren't the guys you're going to be relying on in that core five to get your interior pass rush. And so when we're talking about this game, based off of who we saw in the game, it was disappointing. But based off of, is this going to be a regular season trend? Based off of week two against the Falcons in the preseason, I certainly wouldn't go that far.
All right. All right. Well, fair enough. Let's move on a little bit. I think you mentioned it earlier, and this is certainly true. We didn't see anything special in terms of scheme or package from Orr. Orr has kind of joked about this at the podium during camp, which has been kind of fun. But he said, he said, this game, they only went away from a standard nickel one time the entire game. And that was in the goal line play where they scored the touchdown and brought them within one. So they actually, on first and goal from the three, they put in a third defensive lineman. The first time they put in their base package the entire game, every other snap was nickel. And it's just, to me, it just Orr is kind of thumbing his nose at the need to do anything different or tricky to try and win a preseason game.
Oh, yeah, and that's exactly how it should be. I think it'd be a funny conversation to have if their preseason streak was still going on. And you're like, oh, did they try something crazy here to try to salvage the game and keep that streak going? But it has no talk about competitive advantage and disadvantage. There's no advantage to you putting out all your cards on the table right now. Obviously, right. You want to be able to evaluate the best you can with what you have, but not at the expense of getting film. And we know even different teams have different training camp rules, training camp regulations in terms of what can go out and what can't go out. The Ravens are very tight to the vest, you know, in terms of what they can actually, you know, what people can actually put out there. Whereas other teams, you know, you're seeing every single play that they're running. And Baltimore, it doesn't shock me whatsoever they've gone this route. I mean, all the coaching staff is most definitely on board with it. And it's nice that they're having a little fun with going out there and saying, hey, we know what we're doing here. We're not putting anything on the table because we don't want to have that out on film for a team like Kansas City to look at before week one or divisional opponents. That's exactly how I think they should be playing it.
Right. I'm fully on board with it. It's also kind of fun to have the anticipation of the opener and all the new toys you're going to see in use. Yeah. And we got this with McDonald in a good way. And we also saw McDonald adjust in game and do things that were very positive. And Martindale, oh man, did we see a bunch of special blitzes and packages brought out by him, including the first ever uses of the race car. So the first ever four outside linebacker uses and actually five outside linebacker uses on individual plays, which happened six times in 2018, by the way. Those were all under Martindale. So we got to see all of this cool new stuff that we didn't know they had that plan kind of thing at that point. I think we probably in season was the first time we saw Kyle Hamilton play big nickel as well. It probably was against the Texans last year. Yeah,
I would say so to that. But that's the thing, too, where I think a common misconception is that, oh, the Ravens just hired from within. The system's going to stay practically the same. And it's just going to be what Mike McDonald's was, where I think that is pretty far from what we're going to see this season. A lot more just Zach Orr touches on this defense. I mean, they don't have Mike McDonald anymore. Zach Orr has his own ideas. And so while, yes, they are keeping some general parts of what they have always done here, Zach Orr is going to have a lot more up his sleeve than just, oh, this is what Mike McDonald did. This is going to be what Zach Orr does. It's going to be a little bit different this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be different. I think there will be core concepts kept. I think the starting from cover two is a great starting look for discouraging people from throwing deep. I think Orr has shown a predilection to that. I'll tell you one other thing that I think Orr is sticking with. I think Orr is going to love the slot blitz and he's going to bring it a ton. Yes. We saw it already. Pepe Williams bring it once from each side in these first two games. And it's basically a mirror image of the same blitz that they brought. Yeah. It was an inside linebacker and him rushing from the side when the blitz was shown on the other side and dropped. And it just, I see that and I say, okay, they had six slots at slot corner from slot corner last year. I bet that number could even be higher this year.
Yeah, and even, you know, Arthur Mutt's going to have to miss some time to start the year, but they still have the personnel to be able to do that. And Pepe Williams has shown, as you mentioned, that he can be effective in that role if that's where they want to use him. And if he gets snaps there, I mean, that was one of Arthur Millett's, you know, despite him being great last season from a general perspective, that was one of his best qualities, is Mike McDonald could use him. And teams really didn't have an answer because he was so quick off the line. He was able to get there in a hurry. So I agree with you. I think that what we've seen, that is one little tidbit that we can take away of like, oh, this actually probably will translate over the regular season.
Yeah. All right. So what else we have is interesting about this game? No onside kick at the end. I was surprised by it at the game, and I thought, did they put in some rule where you couldn't do an onside kick of the preseason? Is that why they're not doing this year? And then I come home and, oh, the onside kick was perfectly legitimate. And then I listened to the broadcast and they were actually kind of wondering why not try it at this point. In the fourth quarter and trailing, you're allowed to announce an onside kick, set it up as you would in past years and do it. But those conditions were met, and the Falcons, for whatever reason, decided they'd rather get on a bus and go home.
Yeah, if I had to guess why, I might not have anything. Maybe to practice the kickoff, I guess, again, just to get that experience in, because it is so new to everybody. So I would assume that, you know, we know, Ken, preseason wins, losses, we talked about it, doesn't matter at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But with something so new and having such a big impact on how that part of the game is going to be determined this season, maybe the Falcons were just thinking, we don't really need to practice our onside kicks right now. We'd rather get one more rep in, again, in real live game action against a pretty good special teams team, to get that experience of getting another crack at this kickoff rule so that they have as much as they can heading into the season. I think that would be my only guess as to why.
Okay, so I could buy that, except the Ravens, after just losing a game on a fumble in the last seconds of that previous game, we're not going to take any chances with a return on that play. So they're not going to get a return out of it. And I forget if they actually did return the ball.
I can't remember either. Like it might just be getting it in the landing zone. Because, you know, there's all these crazy, like, landing zone, got to put it here, ball goes out to the 30. So that'd be my only reason. But I would think that you'd want to have as much competitive experience trying to win the game with your threes and fours as you can. But they did not decide to do it.
Now, the other thing for this game that was a fairly big topic of conversation among Falcons fans was not using Penix. Number 12 overall draft pick this year, highly criticized pick, didn't have a great first preseason game. You know, his passer rating was about 70 or something, 76 might have been, but wasn't great. Wasn't terrible, wasn't great. He's like 9 of 16 and yardage, but no touchdowns, if I recall correctly. But anyway, the thought was, get him in this game. And it does make a lot of sense if you're really watching the Ravens' first game. Not a lot of edge pressure in really either. Well, obviously the second game they didn't know about, but they didn't see a lot of edge players available in that first game.
Yeah. I was pretty shocked. I thought there was something going on, like maybe he had gotten injured in that game or injured in practice, but the Falcons, and you know, the message from Atlanta was, well, we felt comfortable enough with what we saw in the first preseason game to just not play him. And if everything goes right for Atlanta, like if their plan of the Kirk to Penix transition works, Michael Penix is probably not playing for 2 years. And I would think that you'd want to get him as much experience as possible. I mean, their season, if I understand there's a preseason injury factor and they had lost some guys, I think, during the game and before, I think even in practice before the game. But if Penix goes down, you're not relying on him for your season. Obviously, if Kirk goes down, that's a different conversation. I understand wanting to minimize injury risk with guys, but for Penix, I mean, there's no NFL experience there. You can go up against a defense in Baltimore's that, again, like generally people look at Baltimore's defense, and as you should, and say, yeah, that's a pretty good defense, even when they don't have their stars in. I thought it would have been a great experience for him, but I know you or I don't make those calls, Ken, so it was up to Atlanta, and that's what happened.
It seems like it's the kind of the perfect one because it's a well-coached team. They're going to be well-schemed up in terms of what they do. Yeah, you might face a few blitzes, but Penix got to face that from whoever. Yeah. Ravens hadn't had a lot of pressure and hadn't had a lot of outside linebackers active even. But what the Ravens do present always is a really good coverage back seven that knows what they're doing. Sometimes only the back five, but really the back seven. Simpson now is there and is a guy who can help. it's a group that is challenging for a quarterback, and try to pick that apart should be something I would think you'd get Penix in and you'd try and get him working towards. A lot of times what they talk about in the preseason is they need to get a backup quarterback enough playing time to get him to the point in the season when you might need him. So I don't know how many snaps he had in the first game, but since he threw 16 passes, I think it was, he probably had about 30 snaps or maybe even less. It would really surprise me if that plus his practice is truly enough. Now, they may have a joint practice coming up this week. I don't really know what the Falcons' schedule is. Just surprising to me that they didn't do it. Anyway, yeah,
I thought it would be a soft entry point for him to be able to just get some experience against. Again, you're not facing Roquan Smith, you're not facing Kyle Hamilton. It would have been a nice little like, oh hey, this is still a good defense with the guys that they have out there, but you're not going up. And so if he has to come in for Kirk at some point this season and all of a sudden they're playing bolt, like, you know, they have a team that has all of their stars, you don't have that experience. So I would have thought they would have gotten him the experience, but they did not.
All right. Well, let's move on. Talk a little bit about the order of entry. We always talk about that. So just obviously some DNPs in this game. There's some other players who it might have been a little surprising when they came in the game and how long they stayed. We'll talk a little bit about all of that. And let's start at the cornerback position, where the Ravens really only had five guys who split all the snaps for the game. And one of the mildly surprising things was Holman playing basically the entire game. He played 64 of 68 snaps in this game.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that came in the middle points of the offseason. I think it was, might have been, was it late March? I can't remember when he came in, but I feel like they like him as a practice squad player, especially with what we saw, where I don't think he's making this roster, but if they're giving him all this playing time and having him essentially play the entire game, I would think that he would be in conversation for one of those cornerback practice squad spots, which could also go to a guy like Trayvon Mullen, who we saw come in a little bit later in the game. Mm-hmm. But to me, they made it a point to get him in earlier than other people. I don't think he was on a lot of people's radars coming over, I believe, from Houston, if I'm not mistaken. But it was surprising to see him, and him getting all of those snaps, essentially. It wasn't on my bingo card, but I think it probably goes well for his practice squad chances if that's where he ends up going.
Yeah, he came into the NFL out of Toledo with a terrific pedigree. So he was a 439 guy, actually very similar to Quinyon Mitchell as a first-round draft pick this year in terms of being a very highly thought-of guy playing in a second-tier conference, obviously, brought a lot to the position. He hasn't made anything. I want to bring up his total snaps he's played in his career here, but it's not many. And he's been in the league for 5 years, started off with the Packers, who he was originally drafted by. But in his entire career now, he's played 424. And that's preseason snaps. Let's get his regular season snaps. He's played only 212 regular season snaps in five seasons, with 100 of those coming last year at Houston. Interesting gamble by the Ravens on a guy who will be 30 years old in September.
Yeah, what wasn't what I was expecting. And again, I don't think he's necessarily making this roster, but I could see him as a practice squad guy. I think that's where I'm probably penciling him in.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think I would want him kept for that. Where there's actually Ravens competition, we'll talk about the other cornerback spot here, among several players who were playing very well. JAD played 15 snaps. Interestingly, they brought him in for the first, third, and fifth series of the game. Mullen was in there. I think he was in for the first four series. No, that's not exactly correct. He played the second, third, and fourth series. I thought he played pretty well in this one. Certainly. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
He improved his stock because he hadn't done much and he hadn't been able to get on the field. But, right. But JAD, this was his best game as a pro, even though it was only 15 snaps.
Yeah, he's you know, apparently showed up during training camp so far, and I think he's a guy that a lot of people have he's been like a forgotten man almost because of the health issues that he has had. He hasn't been able to get on the field. He struggled a bit early in his rookie season as well when he was getting on the field.
Yep.
But this is a guy that I think with just being in the NFL, being around the team, getting the work in, I think he might be a roster lock here. Like, I think he's making this team, and I think that while he might not play a bunch of snaps for the Ravens, special teams value could be a thing for him in terms of role that he could possibly play. And games like this only increase those chances.
You know, they constantly talk him up at camp, so it's hard to get a true read on him. I look at the guy and I see a guy who can run, no doubt about it, a guy who can stay in phase with the receiver, but he is the quintessential cornerback who cannot find the football. And yep. And the reason he can't do it is because he can't put his hand, he doesn't trust his hand on the receiver to tell him where that receiver is going so he can turn back and find the football. And it's a big handicap to go with. It leads to more penalties a lot of the time, but also leaves you with the only impact you can make on the football usually be at the point of the catch or by reading the hands of the receiver. And both of those are secondary ways. You don't want to really be relying on that. And if you are relying on that, you better be freaking Marlon Humphrey in terms of having baseball bats for arms to knock that ball loose, whether you get a fumble or a PD. And he doesn't have that either. He just doesn't have the physicality for that. So he's a guy who I think is always going to be kind of limited as a corner. And I did think there was a chance that he'd be on the outside. But based on the way the play order went in here, more than how they talked about him, I now think he's very likely to make the team, despite the fact, you know, he's in his third year. So a player like Cooper, who's in there, the last guy, has played fantastic this preseason.
Yes.
You know, well, it's only in 5 targets, but no completions. Right. He's had a PD. He's finding the football in the air. He knows what he's doing. And he's played a fair number of snaps. He's just looked a lot better, in my opinion, than JAD has. And I think, honestly, he's probably looked every bit as good in camp, where he's had his hands on the football a few times too. And I don't understand the current amount by which the Ravens coaches, I guess, feel the need to protect a player like JAD with a lot of positive comments. You know, the normal amount is fine. Just don't go over the top. Just don't freaking tell me he's playing like a starter right now. And Harbaugh actually did that recently. I'm kind of bothered by over the top comments about a non-productive cornerback who you kind of understand what the problem is. And he's already 3 years into his career and he can't stay on the field. And you know, you've got multiple issues that are there and obvious. I understand the need to want to motivate that player, but I don't understand the need to overpraise him.
Well, I think it would be a different conversation if he had been relatively healthy. He had had flashes and moments of, okay, yeah, he's been on the field for a lot and he's shown that. But
look at that play.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But now we've got 15 snaps from a week 2 preseason game against the Falcons in his third year. And that's the, you know, best he's ever played.
Yeah, so it's certainly a different conversation when there is not really a lot of that tape and you're saying, okay, well, this guy's up to Brandon Stevens level essentially right now, which obviously is not the case. So I'm all for motivation. I'm with you, Ken. I'm all for motivating a guy in showing that belief. I think they've done a lot with Rashad Bateman, not in terms of just like overdoing it, but like everybody that's been up there has been talking about, okay, Bateman this, Bateman that. But Bateman even has shown, like, obviously, we know he's shown more than JED. So I think he makes this roster, but I know you and I have even talked about the lack of ability to locate on the football before in previous episodes when we were talking about him even a couple of years ago. And it still looks to be somewhat of an issue here now for him.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, Mullen in the game a little bit. Cooper was in the game last. Again, if that's, by the way, if you got those four guys, Holman, JD, Mullen, Cooper, all fighting for outside spots, and Cooper can also play in the slot, but those four guys are all fighting for outside snaps versus four guys who are already guaranteed to be on the team in terms of both rookies, in terms of Tampa and Wiggins and the both starters, Stevens and Humphrey, they're not going anywhere. So the only job open, the only is probably the fifth cornerback on the outside, which now does appear to be JD. That's a hell of a bunch of talent. The Ravens may really need to move one before cuts if they can get a conditional pick or an actual pick for them if they can. A lot of teams are short on corners going into the season, and they're going to look right to the Ravens roster or practice squad for their first replacement they need.
Yeah, and even just cut down day, I mean, there's a chance that one or multiple of these guys get claimed off. Like, I would not be surprised if Bump Cooper got claimed off of waivers. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these guys did, because it seems to happen every single year. And I know we talk about it, Ken. Seems like every single season, most teams, they have some level of cornerback depth. Some teams are flush with it. Other teams don't have as much. But as the season goes on, they just drop like flies. And you need to have as many guys as you can. And so Baltimore would love to get all these guys on their practice squad, I'm sure. But in reality, every other team would love to get these guys on their roster if they can afford to get more quality cornerback depth. So they're going to have one or two guys who they're either going to have to move on from, like you mentioned, trade, get a pick for, or just hope and pray like they did somehow one year with our Darius Washington. They let him go, and somehow he was not picked up by anybody and was able to move on to Baltimore's practice squad. They have to pray that something like that happens, because there's too much talent to keep on the roster, which is a good problem to have, but it does mean that you sometimes lose some of that, which is unfortunate.
All right. Pepe Williams getting lots of playing time, getting lots of action on the blitz. I'm not convinced that his roster spot is absolutely safe. He's probably in reasonably good shape, but he's a third-year player also, so he has that riding against him. And the Ravens have a lot of slot corner depth already, and I think that it would make a lot of sense if our Darius were back in the slot, even though it looks like he's doing some things well at safety. I think he just makes a lot of sense to get him on the field, which would mean that the most snaps you can get for our Darius Washington with the current other defensive backs this team has, and how I would guess they're going to deploy them, is going to be as the slot corner on obvious passing downs.
Yeah. And I think this is almost like a triangle here of things, and not to get too much into safety conversation. I'll only mention it a couple of things here, but if they feel good enough with our Darius Washington there, and they love what Bo Braid can do, and they want Bo Braid on this roster, do they feel comfortable enough with Washington as their starter until Mallett gets back? You put Bo Braid on the roster, you let Williams go, and then you also have the option to play Kyle Hamilton there at points. Marlon Humphrey can shoot in there, we know. Do they feel confident enough with some level of that, with Washington being their starter and then other guys filling in when needed? Is that enough for them to not keep Pepe on the roster? I think it is possible. I agree with you, where I think even Jalen Armour Davis, his roster spot feels more secure for some way, shape, or form than Pepe Williams right now. And it's not that Williams is doing anything wrong. Like, it's not like he's playing terrible football and like it's a conversation about his play. It's just a matter of there are other players that Baltimore might want to keep. They might feel better about other depth at other places. And it might just be a guy's forced out just because of a numbers game. And that could be the situation here with Pepe Williams.
Very, very well could be. He's in a tough battle right now. In some ways he's in a battle with players at other positions. Let's move on to safety. Started the game with Ardarius and Eddie Jackson in the game. And, you know, Ardarius is getting some time at free safety in addition to strong safety. He did probably spend more time around the line of scrimmage coming up and doing some run fitting. In fact, it's one of the good things that came out of this game was some of the tackling he did, too. I think we'll get that into that in the part two, because I know I'm going to bring him up. But, you know, Eddie Jackson now has guaranteed money in his contract, I believe. And that's something I always have to look up to make sure I'm not attributing it to the wrong player. But I believe he has guaranteed money. So I believe he's going to make the team no matter what. And that really means that the roster battle for one spot, unless the Ravens get real creative or they have some $750,000 in guaranteed money. So he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, the roster battle comes down to you know, things like Worley versus Williams for the last roster spot, or it could be Worley versus Braid because they like a first year player like Braid. In my opinion, Braid will last on the practice squad at least initially. There's another possibility is that you just have a couple injuries and the Ravens then set their roster up for some midseason replacements, and the secondary is a very good place to do that. Because you have more probably natural attrition and some of the soft tissue injuries at those positions, and you can't, it's very hard to maintain all the way through to December, for example, your talent on the practice squad there. It's very hard for that it won't get poached by other teams. So we'll see how that plays out. But Worley is definitely a guy who's getting cut because he's naturally part of the handshake crew. He and Urban are the two obvious candidates for it. But the question is, will he be back for week one or go to the practice squad? He's probably also safe on the practice squad. Yeah. I'm not sure there's another team.
I think to me that is, if they want to keep both Washington and Pepe Williams, I think that you could probably have Worley kind of be the role that he's been in for the past year plus now, which is he gets called up on game day and you put him back down to the practice squad after the game and you have that extra versatility. They obviously love him as a player. He's been there for what feels like forever now. And Pepe will probably get claimed somewhere. Like, I'd be pretty shocked if he gets cut and isn't picked up by somebody. So if they feel confident enough in keeping Williams on the practice squad and they feel like they can get away with letting him go and getting him back, then that's something they could do. But I mean, the obvious solution here, even if it's not Pepe Williams, even if it's somebody else, you just get free up the roster space, you bring Worley back, you put him on the practice squad, whatever you want to do it. And you have a couple of different options for what you can do with a player that is still going to, I think, be up for most game days and plays at least some level of a role, even if it's just on special teams.
Worley, you're talking about now.
Worley, yes.
Worley. Yes. Yeah, and I agree. So you have three practice squad elevations. You can use those up. Worley is not the kind of player who's automatically going to get taken, as he proved with the 18 transactions he went through 2 years ago. But he's a guy who the Ravens clearly love, and there's good reason why they do. I think, you know, he's a great he's a great preseason safety. If you want to bet preseason football, bet from the bottom up in terms of the roster, look who's going to be on the field at safety. And if you have a player like Worley, who's got, you know, 9 years in the league and whatnot, his experience means an awful lot at the end of a preseason football game. But anyway, we'll move on to inside linebacker. Simpson, tremendous breakout game. I do want to talk about that a little later, but we'll bring it up with him when he comes up. The other thing that was interesting and they hadn't done yet was they put Harrison in at the Mike linebacker spot to start the game. He played outside linebacker in the first game because they were so shorthanded there. Really only still played, I think, one or two series, whatever it was. But Simpson and Harrison to start the game, very high caliber inside linebacker core. But I love the fact that Harrison could be the nuclear option if anything happened with Roquan.
Yeah, I do too. And his versatility is also going to be really key. But I think to me, having him as your third right now behind Roquan and Trenton Simpson, and then if he needs to step in for Roquan in that position, I would feel pretty comfortable with it. I know he hasn't, you know, hasn't been necessarily a full-time starter during his career, but he's a sound, solid player. He's physical. We've seen that physicality on display. I think it's not a one-for-one replacement. Obviously, no one can straight up replace Roquan Smith. But if there was a player on this roster that I think could do it the best, and honestly, maybe span across a couple teams for a guy, I think Malik Harrison would still be that player for them.
Yeah, and if he were to be Roquan's replacement, let me be perfectly clear, he'd be a two-down replacement. The Ravens would go to dime defense. Yes. They'd be Simpson would stay in on third down. They bring in a dime back. And the Ravens have the personnel in spades to cover the dime back position at this point. They have a lot of options there. So it would require them to make some compromises, but he'd still be excellent. And Harrison, what he allows you to do is he's a guy who, if he can be your nth, and I don't know what that N is, outside linebacker, and also be your fourth inside linebacker, you can end up saving a roster spot just by having him on the team if you can really project to having him available for either role, with his primary role, of course, being that he's a five-unit special teams player.
Right, and I think that even just getting crazier with that, Trenton Simpson also showed at Clemson that he can play on the edge. I don't think they're going to use him a bunch in that role this season, but the Ravens love their versatility, and so going back to Harrison, if he can play some level of a hybrid role, we know that he was coached up behind. It was the eventual plan was, you know, he was the backup to Tyus Bowser in that Sam role. And he has that experience to be able to go out there and not only fill in for Roquan if needed, but to give you that extra versatility to maybe take some pressure off of guys. You can maybe maneuver your roster in certain ways if you want to, if it comes down to it. So I love the versatility that he brings to the table, and I'm really glad the Baltimore made that decision a couple of years ago to bring out that versatility. But he did do this back at Ohio State too. I'm not saying that he never did it. Like in college, he also had that experience. So it's good for the Ravens to have, because we know that they love their positionless defense and what they're able to do with it.
Very, very valuable player, and looks like could be a long-term Raven, because I think he has more value to the Ravens than other teams, which is the way a lot of their special teams guys end up being. Let's move on to outside. I guess we'll mention Jennings and Rigby finished out the game in the second half. Rigby, we probably won't mention him among the individual players. Seven tackles for the second consecutive game. Again, six defensive losses. He had six defensive losses in the first game, six defensive losses in the second. He's had a very high tackle rate, and putting people on the ground is important, and he's got the right size to play Mike. He's potentially a very good special teams player, and even flashed in camp with an interception the other day on a ball tipped to himself. Very, very great facility on the play. But he's a guy who, if you really are looking at his tackling has not showed up in terms of value to the Ravens so far, and I think most of that is he's not really a leader to the gap. So while he has the size to play Mike, he probably is better as a trail playing Will that, you know, would be the second man of the ball or be following very closely on the Roquan and whatnot. And that's just not exactly what the Ravens need. The Ravens need the backup Mike if anything were to happen to Roquan, even you know, during a game if he has to leave for a quarter and they want to bring him out. But they Rigby potentially could be that guy, but in my opinion, you don't really want him in on passing downs. You want him on run downs for his size, and for him to be really valuable, he's going to need to find the football a lot quicker.
Yeah, I could see him as a possible practice squad player. I think if they wanted to develop him in ways and figure that out. But I know Josh Ross didn't play in this game, but he impressed me a bunch in week one. And if he's good to go, I would probably expect him, and obviously Chris Board is going to make this team too. So I'd probably expect that to be their five-man group, and then Rigby probably be a practice squad player for him.
You've got five if you include Harrison in that five. So
I've got five right now, are
carrying, and that's fine. I think that may be how it ends up, and Ross is the guy. He's the guy who's on the bubble to make it, and could be part of a created inside or in season replacement as well by using one of the two spots that don't require a cut. Outside linebacker for four players. Basically the order was this: Ajabo came in, and because he departed earlier, he's first on the outside linebacker order. Then Tavius Robinson, who played the entire game, but also started the game. Then Adisa Isaac, who came in, I believe on the second series. I'm just looking at it real quickly. Yeah. Came in on the second series. And then Evans, who came in to start the second half, which was a great relief for him after playing 68 snaps in that first game. Just an absurd overworking that I've never really witnessed in a preseason game before.
Yeah. Man, Ajabo to me showed everything that, you know, the Ravens wanted him to in this game. Didn't have an official tackle on the stat sheet. Pass rush move, setting the edge. I thought he displayed everything in his first game cleared to action. But Tavius playing the whole game, I think that, or at least essentially all of it, means that And I've been kind of saying this, I feel like he's going to have a pretty decent role on this defense this season. I think that he played a lot more than a lot of people expected his rookie year. I kind of expected it to be more of a developmental year. He'll kind of sit back, watch, learn a little bit. But he was in there getting real experience and doing a decent job at it, too. So I think that they really like Tavius Robinson. Him playing the whole game, I think, shows that they want to see everything that he can bring to the table. And again, I wouldn't be shocked if he and Ajabo kind of play in tandem together, maximizing their strengths as that kind of 3-4 hybrid type thing. If it comes down to that and they want to figure out how to use them together, as opposed to having a straight 3-4 rotation with those guys.
Yeah, I actually see a different thing happening. It may be that Tavius will play more passing downs this year, and that's going to have to be an evolution thing. I think he's been a little bit better as a pass rusher this year at camp. Pass rushing, definitely, it's the least of his strengths. As you go, so what they did last year is they played him on first down opposite Harrison in their base defense. I think that could be done again, and it provides great relief for your primary pass rushing assets to be on the field when they're really needed. So if you can take 12 snaps a game, 14 snaps a game, sometimes might even mean only 9 snaps a game, which are purely first downs when the game is still within reach, so it's a run is more likely, and give those to a pair that you can just provide some snap relief. It's a really big benefit, and I think Robinson has value there. Now, they could assign someone else to that role, but to me, Ajabo is an absolutely pure pass rusher. He is not an edge setter, not a physical player. If one thing that keeps happening in camp, he keeps getting in these, not brawls, that's not the correct way to say it, but he's this rivalry going on with Kadir Ishmael. Yeah. Well, pick a rival your own size, first of all. Ishmael's a tall guy, and he's very physical, and he's put him on the ground once. He put Tavius Robinson. He had a really great rep against Tavius Robinson, where Tavius obviously thought he was playing too hard the other day and kind of fought back and wanted to then be in the next rep against him and really gave him a hard time on it. And then later, it's like, all the outside linebackers seem to hate Kadir, which is great for Kadir, by the way. So it says great things about how physical he's playing. is that Adafe Owe knocked him on the ground, and then he stood over him like he's teabagging him. Literally, it's the greatest. It's the worst look for Adafe, and it's the best look for Kadir. I just love that.
Hey, you know, if you don't have people hating you, you're not doing something right. So that is exactly what it is for Kadir. I love that. But yeah, that when I said in tandem, I more so meant like Tavius coming in and being that early down guy, being the run.
Okay, gotcha.
And then in tandem, meaning Ajabo comes in
to replace him
in his the pass rush. So I said it weird. So my apologies on that. But that's more so. I agree with you in terms of what they can do there.
We'll certainly be bringing up Adisa Isaac later. He played most of the game. And then Joe Evans, we've talked enough about him. Let's move on to the defensive line. We got 4 snaps out of Travis Jones. That's probably 4 too many in my opinion, but I know that, I guess they wanted to present a front to start the game, but he's not a guy I'd be taking chances with. He's so central and so much of an opportunity for the Ravens to get a bust out performance that you really want to make sure he's, kept solid. Then Washington and Urban each played some snaps early in the game. It wasn't much for anybody. And then they came in the 4-man group of Tupou, Sanat, Walthor, and Ravenel, who all saw a ton of playing time in the first preseason game. Ravenel in particular on the edge in the game because they didn't have any other outside linebackers after Evans. Those guys saw just were tremendously overworked in that first game.
Yeah. And I think that we could possibly see Tupou as a practice squad player. But as we kind of talked about earlier in the show, the run defense kind of went downhill once that group, the initial group came out, which is to be expected when you don't have your studs in there. But I think that – and Tupou had a nice play or two, I think. I saw him in there making some good plays. But, yeah, to me, I think that none of these guys necessarily – I mean – there is potential, but I probably see 2 of these guys making the practice squad and they'll kind of work in from there and figure out. I think one of the things that, I don't know if they were expecting Rashad Nichols to play a big role before he ended up getting released, but he was a guy that had been on their practice squad for the past couple of years. Now they have to find new guys to come in there, and whether it is a Tupou who's a vet or they want to try to develop some of these other younger players there, that's one of the bigger storylines I'm looking out for. especially as they get these guys a ton of snaps.
So the Ravens have a strategy in past year. Well, I've always thought of the Ravens as trying to develop young talent on their practice squad, but the recent Ravens of the DaCosta era really have been one to have a lot of super veterans on their roster. Yeah. So last year they had a bunch of 6 and 8 year guys who were sitting on their practice squad. And Laquan Treadwell was a kind of a poster child for that, but they had others as well. It wasn't just him. And Tupou and Sanat are both longtime veterans in the NFL, and they appear to be like close friends on the team. They always walk out to practice together. So it's something they appear to be close friends from what I can tell. Walther and Ravenel are rookies. And so the obvious advantage that if either of those guys were to become good, and Ravenel looks like a five tech who possibly could replace Urban to me, Ravenel is a guy you might want to bet on. And you certainly, you know, want to think about using a practice squad player on him, but the Ravens of recent years have done more with trying to keep veterans there that they may need that season. And Tupou and Sanat certainly meet that standard as far as being, you know, guys who've been around the league for a long time.
Yeah, I would think that maybe they would want to, well, the way that they've been doing it, they might want to keep both vets. But I think that having one vet and one younger guy, like if they kept Tupou and Ravenel,
yeah,
I would be definitely okay with that. I just think it is definitely along the lines of, well, this is a contending team and you don't want to have, you know, 15 rookies and second-year guys on your practice squad. And a guy gets down, you use a practice squad at Ovations on guys who don't have the experience. So I could definitely see a lot of these players who are fighting for roster spots, maybe, you know, flipping it to offense for a second Anthony Miller, possibly being in that conversation as a practice squad vet. Obviously, you could see Tupou being that guy for them as well. But I think Tupou and Ravenel is a good balance of both the vet and the young developing perspective that you can have there.
I agree with you. And I think that also meets the needs for potentially the future. The first lineman to be replaced at this point is probably Urban. Yeah. And when that happens, whenever Brent is not a good player anymore, and he's playing in his 11th year now and seems to be playing pretty well, certainly had a good year last year. The likely end for Brent Urban is going to come due to injury. We're not going to see it coming, but when it happens, it's going to be something that's hard for a guy his age to rehab from and get back from. And it's going to be time to try and look to a new player. And, you know, it's quite possible that that Ravenel could be that guy. Of course, it could be the next guy. You know, it could be a year and a half from now and the next guy who's the one they have to look for. So timing is everything in this kind of thing. Kevin, I really appreciate having you on the show. We'll come back and talk in part two about the individual players. But why don't you tell us about what you have going on at Locked On Ravens?
Yeah, absolutely. Always appreciate you having me, Ken. It's always a good time. You can find me over at Locked On Ravens 5 days per week, anywhere you get your podcasts in audio form, Apple, Spotify, and also in YouTube. You got the video form going on there as well. So news, analysis, updates. We go live after every single game and give an instant reaction, piece of Ravens big news. So we have a bunch of content over there. If you're looking for more daily Ravens coverage, aside for what Ken does here, and of course he does a wonderful job, Locked On Ravens is another avenue to get that daily Ravens content.
All right. Outstanding, Kevin. Thanks for coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you want to just be a good fan of the show, tell somebody else about it. You know, somebody else who you think might like this kind of Ravens content. If you happen to be listening on YouTube, please like and subscribe. We're always trying to up that number, although YouTube is not our primary venue. Obviously, you could probably tell. We do always appreciate anybody who's bringing in new listeners. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you as always, Ken. Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.